Hello, this is Mystic Babylon Open Mic Poetry Podcast, broadcasting from near the Hate. Join me in a caravan ride through the San Francisco Bay Area to each of its open mics, the Bay Area being known for its huge collection of readings. Today we are going to have two poets besides me read. One poet works in the Tenderloin and job training related activities, and his name is James Tracy. He is an author of many books, which he will go into more detail about shortly. His latest venture is a book called Molotov Mouth by Manic Depress here in San Francisco, a book of social justice poetry. The other reader is Gene Lipton, who I ran into at Poetry Express Open Mic in Berkeley at the Priya restaurant. She runs two open mic venues herself. One is the Synergy Women's Open Mic at the Frank Beth Center for the Arts in Alameda, and the other is at the Women's Cancer Resource Center in Berkeley. Let me mention that on the webpage of this poetry podcast at http://mysticbabylon.podomatic.com, I will post some contact info for the poets, it being easier to read rather than to listen to. May I remind you to post comments or send me an email, which you can do through the aforementioned website or through my other website at www.rhodespoetry.com. The Rhodes part of the URL is spelt like Rhodes Scholar. Please, if you can, sponsor this site by buying the books and the chapbooks of the reading authors. My volume of mystic poetry is entitled Spirits of Bondage and Inherent Transcendence, and you can buy it at almost any large bookstore on the web. The poetry podcast will start shortly. This is John Rhodes, and the first poem I'm going to read from my book called Spirits of Bondage and Inherent Transcendence is called Be More a Witness Than a Sinner. It is a poem about contriteness to sin as a way of being free from it. In the poem, I talk about the burning bush. I emphasize in the poem that it is better to face sin and accept the singeing burn of the burning bush rather than rebelling and complaining about fate, which is at least very difficult to change by us or by God. Here is the poem. One man and subordinate said I was poked by a thorn. Another said I touched poison ivy, and about it making me scratch like the devil, somebody should have pointed out its leaves of three and me subsequently warned. On the contrary, now I sit by a more humble soul who knew that to sin we are all weak. And I heard him say that he was seared by the burning bush and witnessed God's burning love, even though it burns even the meekest of meek. Nevertheless, man doesn't have to protect himself from God's flame or have to wear a cloak to shield himself completely from blame. Nor does he have to wear eternally sin's yoke, because universal Godhead witnesses Brahman, Kshatriya, Sudra, or Malefactor as just the same. Father, Son, or Holy Ghost, all are unified in his name, even when they brag and boast. Many times I have fought to try to tell the warp and woof of my tale, but for some reason it became monotonous, unapproachable, and stale. I was brave, you say, to face my own sin, but you have more collected thoughts, and you don't swagger like I do when you see someone imbibing to forget with swills of gin. When I first witnessed God and the burning bush, I felt sawed in half, or hung like Judas, completely crushed and daft. I couldn't plod on because the gossip of my sin clawed at me, the sinner, and stifled my rebellious song. But then I realized that there are few that can stand temptation that teases the tip of the tongue, which takes them as victims, and many of them will be, without a witness, prosecuted and hung. And whether guilty or innocent, by the scorpion's tail they will be stung. So God says that just to witness the burning bush is many times better than drinking alone to oneself in sin like a lush. Thank you. This second poem is called The Frankness of Desires. In this poem, I express how it is hard to be frank about desires and dreams. Often we spend our whole life trying to be frank about them. Here is the poem. I wish I could be frank. I have desires that break the bank. If only my dreams were not just utopian, but were something more clear, something more on the beam, more natal and fallopian, as if my dreams and reality were closer together than it would seem, as if conscience and ignorance were on different teams. My life lacks experience, and also the coming of joy comes over me with its usual sinful ploy. The killing of joy is only known by the grapevine, or by inference from some lonely boy. And in spite of the joy of sharing and wishing to impart to other these desires, this philosophy does make the cynic become annoyed who cremates our dreams by the way of Satan's fires, and thusly the doubting Thomas he also hires. In turn, by deference, does this cynic make us believe that this growing of conscience by the dreamer is unbecoming and unholistic and way too brief, and therefore destroyable in relation to most who believe. Let my dreams wake me up and meet me in the morning as I wake up from ignorance, and let me think of life as a woken spirit and grand. Thank you. This last short poem is called It's Greek to Me. It's about the feeling we all have of sin being, as the saying goes, Greek to us, and how it seems to make everybody else, including the clergy, seemingly loyal to these alienating, inappropriate desires. They should become expatriates of these seditious lands that accept sin as the norm. Here is the poem. The devil is a Grecian priest. His mind is alive, but his soul is deceased. He is not tame. He is an arson and a beast, but confessor, to say the least. He lit my soul on fire. His presence disturbed even the funeral pyre. He spoke the devil's word, though everything he said was true. The only thing, it was in Grecian, and it was all construed. When the priest left, all you could see was his heels. He disappeared quickly, so you couldn't tell how he feels. His face was shrouded, and his figure into the night did rapidly steal. Everything he said, especially when he talked Grecian, was foreign to me. Even with all he had to say, I could not totally agree. Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is James Tracy. I'm a poet stationed in the Bay Area, the San Francisco Bay Area. I'm also an activist and an organizer. I've been active on housing issues with the Right to a Roof, part of the Coalition on Homelessness, and the San Francisco Community Land Trust. I'm going to read four poems with you today, and I'm very honored to be part of Mystic Babylon's podcast. This first piece is a brand new piece. It's written in tribute to the Fong tenants in San Francisco's Chinatown. They have been fighting their eviction for over 7 years, and recently emerged victorious and are instituting a permanently affordable, limited equity, resident-owned and run co-op, so they'll never have to worry about being evicted again. It's right around the corner, of course, from the International Hotel, the site of a gigantic eviction struggle over 30 years ago, and I'm overjoyed that this story has a happy ending. It's called In Between Shadows, a Victory. In the morning, their building lies in the shadow of a Transamerica pyramid scheme. In the evening, it falls in the shadow of the International Hotel, where E-V-I-C-T-I-O-N, nearly spelled R-E-V-O-L-U-T-I-O-N. In this building, dignity returns to the word fight, not rhetoric on a handbill or a street brawl. Fight the whims of developers, fight colleges willing to bet education against housing. For a community which stays in place, cradles its old and its young, laughs in Cantonese and Mandarin, and makes it to the protests, the lawsuits, the press conferences, the long meetings on the stairway. And in between these shadows, in between community and capital, lies a very tender victory of a home in the hands of the people. Thank you. This next piece is from a collection of poetry. entitled Molotov Mouse, Explosive New Writing, published on Manic D Press. Anti-war teach-in at the Veterans Administration Hospital. Universities out of the anti-war teach-ins now. Academies out of anti-war teach-ins now. This anti-war teach-in is at the Veterans Administration Hospital in room 104. John Johnson, a man whose addiction shot a Ho Chi Minh trail through his body because heroin was the only thing that could beat the pangs of manifest destiny from him. And room 127, Rafael Franklin Gonzalez, there's a phantom itch where his leg used to be. And in the courtyard, the unknown soldier sits in a wheelchair and screams and screams and screams, the screams that should be heard around the nation. Thank you. That reminds me very much of a quote from the great Italian poet Pasolini, who said, "Flag, flag, become a rag again, so the poorest of the poor can hold you." This next piece is also from the Explosive New Writing collection. It's called Some of Our Best Friends Are Cannibals. We would never object to their hiring and promotion, you see. Some of our best friends are cannibals. Although we secretly hope they don't want to date our daughters, we want you to know that some of our best friends are cannibals. It was hard, however, to have them over for dinner because their feelings were hurt because they thought we would fix them a vegetarian instead of a vegetarian meal. We realize that Hannibal Lecter is a cruel stereotype used to oppress the cannibals. We don't even like the word cannibal. We prefer flesh-eating American. We understand cannibals. We think they have a taste for what it means to be human. Some of our best friends are cannibals. We understand the cannibals because we are. This is a tribute piece for Father Louis Vitale, who is the former pastor of St. Boniface Church, which is a people's church in the middle of the Tenderloin. And Father Louis is a peace activist and a man of justice. And when he retired, I wrote this for him. It's called Father Louis Vitale, Anointed Pope Today. Father Louis Vitale was anointed Pope today. Direct Action declared a new sacrament right after First Communion. Catholics run out to the nearest schools of mass recruitment, mass confusion, mass collusion, mass deception, and mass victimization, and cross the line again and again and again, until one day all the shouts of Basta Ya and yet another chorus of We Shall Overcome and the 50th verse of We Shall Not Be Moved and all of our people united will never be defeated and overconfident, this is what democracy looks like, give way to a whisper. We won. We won. We won. The war is over. We won. Immigrants are treated like brothers and sisters. We won. Homosexuals are now seen as part of God's plan, not God's shame. We won. Women can exercise their faith and leadership fully. We won because kids know that the church is a safe sanctuary again. We won because Italians divorced Columbus. We won because the church choir sings a little hip-hop and punk rock now. We won because the workers have their democracy. We won because the beloved community does not seem so naive anymore. We won because if it's not liberation, it ain't theology. We won because no one is asking what side of history the church is on now. We won. We won. We won. We won. Thank you very much. I think I'll do one more poem. Just because if you're going to be a political poet, you have to have a good sense of humor about yourself. Nothing's worse than a self-righteous political poet, or a self-righteous anything. So this very short poem is called A Million Revolutions. I'm walking in circles, I picket myself. Do not patronize. Self, unfair to self and others. Boycotting myself like a field strawberry. I will not buy my own bullshit anymore. Leading a sit-down strike in my own room until better living conditions are achieved. Washing my Molotov mouth out with soap for kinder, gentler dialogue. and I'm stepping outside and smiling because the earth moves a million revolutions per minute. Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
Hi, my name is Jean Lupton. I live in Oakland, California, and I'm going to read you some of my poems today. Thanks for tuning in. A book of my poetry is available if you'll write to me at my email address, jeany98@aol.com. And you can also find my email address and my website on the Mystic Babylon website. All my poems come from life experience, and the first two that I'm going to read are short little stories, very short stories. Power. After meeting with the divorce lawyer, Wanda felt strong again. To celebrate, she stopped in the pub for a beer and some chowder. There were oyster crackers, too. So small and so crunchy, Wanda didn't hold back. She chewed them up. She chewed them up like an army of disintegrating little husbands. The little old lady who doesn't know she is old rides the subway. She always offers her seat to pregnant women. They pat her arm, say, "Oh, no, that's okay," and remain standing. She will often try to give her seat to other little old ladies. Puzzled or insulted, they frown, shake their gray heads, don't budge. Whenever someone offers their seat to the little old lady who doesn't know she's old, she always accepts, believing them to have been moved by her great beauty. Now I'm going to read a slightly longer story called Fidel Castro, Grandma, and the Country Club. The country club where I took swimming lessons and Daddy played golf was actually out in the country, but still in Virginia. Daddy was seventh generation Virginian and not about to leave, even for a golf game. I rode out there in the green Chevy station wagon in the front seat with Daddy. Every time we went to the country club, I waved to the little old colored lady sitting by her house by the road, and she waved back to me. I was a good swimmer and could hold my breath underwater for a very long time. One hot day, Daddy and I were riding to the country club. Suddenly, we heard on the radio that Fidel Castro had conquered Cuba. Daddy was furious. "No good communist, godless beast." Daddy belonged to the anti-communist society. He wanted me to be an anti-communist too. And of course I was. I loved my daddy, but I said, "Does Fidel Castro know he's a communist?" I just didn't see how anybody could be so evil on purpose. Daddy said, "Of course he knows." Then he said, "Damn it, that woman is following too close. She's been tailgating me for miles." I looked out the back, and it was Grandma, my daddy's mother, coming to the country club too, driving her white and turquoise 55 Ford. Daddy believed in Chevrolet. Grandma had gotten her driver's license at age 60, bought her own two-tone Ford, and drove all the way to California and back with a friend. Was Grandma teasing Daddy? Was Daddy teasing me? I like to think so. Grandma and Daddy are dead now. Fidel Castro is still in charge of Cuba. I live in California. Now I'd like to read two political poems. Political poem number one, for Francis Newton, September 15th, 2005. And just for information, Frances Newton was a young black woman who was accused and convicted and executed by the state of Texas for murdering her family. And many people believed she was innocent. She was an indigent African-American woman, executed on September 14th, 2005, by the state of Texas. "I'll remember you, Frances. I'll remember that you knew when you stood alone among big white men wielding weapons, when they put their death needle in your arm, taking you down, your time melting, husband dead, children dead. You knew that you were not alone. Self is not singular, Francis. The world lived in your heart last night in that last place. I'll remember that your woman life was sometimes luscious, ecstatic as nature, that you were amazed by a dawn, the sea, a lover. Francis, I will remember you laughing. This political poem is addressed to our president. No to the chaos maker. No, you are not my president. No, you have no right to spy on the people. No, you have no right to cause the murder of hundreds of thousands of innocent Iraqis and of thousands of the youth of the United States. No, you have no right to take funding away from the poor, the elderly, the children, the needy to finance your war. No, you have no right to interfere with women's bodies or lives. No, you are not what Jesus meant. No, you have no right to destroy our wilderness. No, we did not say you could torture anyone. Torture is not the people's will. No, you have no right to dirty the air, poison the water, warm the people's globe. No, you have no right to the power you took from the rightfully elected president. No, you have no right to make your friends wealthy at the expense of the people. No, you had no right to sit by and let 9/11 happen. No, you have no right to lie, manipulate, destroy, profit, usurp. No, you have no right not to care about the people. No, you had no right to ignore the people of New Orleans in their desperate hour. You have no right to make war on Iraq. Your cruel behaviors are shameful in the eyes of all peoples of the world. You are the terrorist. You are the war criminal. No, you are not presidential material. I say no to you, cruel, obscene, fascist chaos maker, enemy of the people. Go back to Texas and stay there. History will despise you, little man. You are the worst that could have happened, but the people will move on. History is on the people's side. This is the dawning of the age of Aquarius, and the dark age of thugs is done. Get out of the way. Be impeached. Be imprisoned. It's over. Okay, thank you for listening to my rant. Now I'd like to read from my new chapbook, But Then You Danced, which is available from my website. And it's these poems are love poems, and they're much calmer. Okay. Love I've yet to meet. Camellias bloom in winter here, and so do I. Come soon. The garden is lush in moonlight. 2 whole hours late, just to bake banana bread, when we could have been together. But then you danced, you danced. No footfalls tell you're coming, only soft clicking of the bead curtain. Your touch unshrouds the radiance at my center. I catch my breath. Reborn. After your touch, my body finally fits. Full of sky and mountain meadows, I sleep all afternoon. Not the same when you came back to bed at dawn with jasmine tea as when I first awoke, enfolded in your warmth. We imprint dawn with the image of our bodies together, the whole day shaped by love. That tingle, that single tear streaking your beautiful face because of me, even now is a downpour to my heart. Thank you very much for listening. Goodbye.
This is the end of Mystic Babylon Podcast. Please come back in 2 weeks. I wanted to add a note in relation to war and Memorial Day, and excuse me if I sound facetious. George Bush is really an innocent pirate, who I call George the Scourge of the Sea. He is really only a harmless brigand. Who would hold a grudge against such a man? Thank you.